This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 130, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, Discount Comic Book Service, and the Netflix.
See, when you do it, you can't do a little witty thing at the end.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 130. My name is Josh. I'm the biggest asshole on the internet. I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor.
Hello.
iFanboy.com. See, I'm adjusting this because it sounds more folksy, and I think that people will relate to it more. Does that work for you guys?
Or they'll think you're making fun of someone.
No, I'm trying to be folksy, like that guy from the Motel 6 ads.
We'll leave the light on.
Yeah, Tom Baudet.
Yeah.
Or like Sam Elliott.
Okay, well, why don't we move on?
All right, at iFanboy.com, we like comics, and we read a lot of them every week. We'll take a bunch of
them. And now you're doing George Bush.
No, yeah, that's what I meant before. Well, yeah, no, you're doing George Bush.
It's because I love
him.
Just
do it normally.
I love him so much.
Why don't you just do it as Josh from Maine?
Yeah.
I don't even know how to – Josh from Maine?
That's your normal voice. You're like Phil Hartman. You don't know what your normal voice sounds like anymore.
I've also been shot. So let's get this done with as quickly as possible. iFanboy.com is a comic book website that us three buddies here have put together. We love each other so much. We love comics, so we do a show about them. That's this one. Every week we read all our comics. One of us will pick the very best one that they read, write a review about it. Then we come here, we talk about that book and all the other books that we read that we want to talk about. We are going to talk about the books in this past week, so if you haven't read them, there will probably be spoilers, and we don't want to ruin it for you, so either skip around using the show notes or come back later after you've read everything. With that being said, Connor, you've surprised us all.
You could use the Force to skip around, too, if you want. Just guess.
Well done.
It's been a while since we've had a qualified pick of the week, and I'm not going to qualify this one so much except to say there was no super great book this week.
Yeah.
The last couple weeks, there have been super great books every week, like a month in a row.
Yeah.
And this week, there was two very good books, and then the rest are all very mediocre, I thought, for me.
I read some really good books this week. I had a lot. I only had like six or so, but I had some strong books.
There were actually no bad books, but it was all very – there were a lot of very average – like that was good but not great, nor was it bad. But there was two really, really good books, and one was Justice League of America number 20 – which is the pick of the week from Dwayne McDuffie and Ethan Van Sciver. And as people who listen to the show know, especially I think last week was the Flash talk, right? We know that the Flash, since Wally West has been back, has been pretty awful. Not just the book, but the character himself. He's got no direction. He seems lost. They don't know. No one seems to know what to do or how to write him. And he's not the guy that we all love that Ron has a big print of on his living room wall.
My lithograph's actually Barry Allen, but yeah, okay, I'll go with it.
Is it Barry Allen?
It's Barry Allen, yeah.
It's animated, I thought.
Yeah, no, but that's Barry Allen. It's not Wally.
All right, well, Flash is the Flash.
We talk at night.
You can't see his boots, can you?
Anyway.
Because the Flashes have different boots.
Yep.
Yeah. So this issue, Justice League of America, is Dwayne McDuffie came on as the writer to much fanfare because he was a Justice League cartoon writer, after being a super comic book writer for many years. And people were looking forward to the ship being righted because a lot of people didn't like Melter's run. Some people did. Josh did. But other people didn't like it.
Right.
And what happened to McDuffie is they came on, and from reports on the web is that he got a lot of editorial interference in his work. And then the last story arc was co-written by him and somebody, I think it was Alan Burnett.
It was Alan Burnett, yeah.
Who also was an animated writer.
I believe it got to a point where Alan Burnett was writing and McDuffie was doing the backup.
Yeah, and it was thrust in the middle of the Salvation Run storyline and nobody was reading, so people were really pissed off. And I know a lot of people on the website and the forums dropped Justice League because of that. But this is the first issue in a while that McDuffie has written on his own. It's all one story. And it was really, really good because McDuffie really gets the characters, and that's something that you see from the cartoon and now in the book, is that he understands the Flash, he understands Wonder Woman, that's what the story's about, is Wonder Woman and the Flash. It starts off with Flash fighting a forest fire, which Wonder Woman shows up to help with, which is something they did in Rucka's Wonder Woman comic, which, strangely enough, they fought a forest fire together. And the Wonder Woman basically takes him aside and says, "What the hell's wrong with you?" Which is basically the question we've all been asking for a few months, is what the hell is wrong with you? And he starts complaining about his family commitments, and he's all discombobulated from being from the future, and she tells him to suck it up and, you know, he's be the Flash. If you're going to be the Flash, you got to deal with that and being the Flash, too. And they run off to fight the Hive, and then in the course of that, the Flash realizes he's got to be the man and be the Flash. And it ends in a really nice note. He runs off to accept all of his responsibilities at once and stop being a whiny little bitch.
Thank God.
No. Now the only question is, will this carry over? And I doubt it will. I think it's probably just something that McDuffie's writing on his own, and the disaster will continue on in the Flash regular book. But there's a couple of great things about this book. One, number one, is he really gets the characters. He really writes a great Flash. He writes a great Wonder Woman, McDuffie. Two, Van Sciver's art was just fantastic. And three, it was a rehabilitation of a character that I really like that has been bad for a while. So those three elements combined together made for a really, really, really good Justice League comic we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
That was awesome, I thought.
When I read my books, and this is actually one of the first books I read because I saw The Flash prominently on it, and then I didn't even check to see what you had picked yet, and then after I read it, I went to the website, and I was like, thank God he picked it, because this is what we want, this is what I want out of The Flash. This was Wally West. It was, right. You know, and it didn't dodge the fact that the kids were introduced. He refers to the kids, he talks about them, but we don't see the 5-year-old boy hulking up, you know, like, thank God the kids and Linda weren't in it, and it was just so, it was a breath of fresh air, and it was just like, it was a great, it was just, it's what The Flash should be, and I hope they, you know, carry this through into the Flash series, but I doubt they will. So, but at least maybe in Justice League we can get a good Wally. So
Mark Waid is a crazy bubble. Forget it. It's not going to happen. Can you imagine?
Mark Waid's not writing anymore.
Oh, he isn't?
He's been gone for weeks, dude.
Weeks? That would be one issue.
Months. I mean, like, issues. Yeah, like Tom Raimi's been writing it for the past two-story arcs.
Isn't he an artist?
No.
Look at me. Ignorant as all hell. Go on.
there was something else I mentioned in the iFanboy mini I did in this show, which was there was a little bit of coloring I really, really liked, was that they gave Wally green eyes.
I thought that was a really good observation, and that was a really nice touch. That was really good. Yeah.
At first, it's strange because you're not used to seeing green-eyed characters in comics, or at least I'm not. You just know everyone's all kind of got nebulous brown or blue eyes.
Yep.
It set him apart. It set him apart as something, as an individual. Like, you know, he's got a recognizable feature now. Like, through his mask, you see green eyes, and he'd stand next to Wonder Woman, and he would look different, which I thought was a really strong touch.
It was really striking, and it was really there was a lot of as much action as there was in this issue. There was a lot of character moments, and you know, so
that's what people wanted from McDuffie when he came on the book. He just got railroaded by DC, or
exactly. And what I thought was really interesting was, like, probably the best scene of the whole thing is the meeting on top of the you know Keystone City or Central City esque Washington Square Park arch. Where Wonder Woman basically, you know, kind of, you know, lectures Wally about shirking his responsibilities. You know, what was really interesting was that, you know, it starts off where it's just kind of these really, you know, this a really great page where it's got, you know, a big kind of, you know, long shot of them standing on it with kind of little panels that are kind of getting closer and closer to their heads. And then you turn the page and you this is actually in the mini video, a kind of almost like Dark Knight-esque or, you know, Frank Miller-esque, you know, where their bodies are silhouetted except for the gold highlights of their costumes. So, like, yes. The Flash's ears and his belt and his wrists and his boots and Wonder Woman's tiara and her belt were, like, the only things that were really colored. But then it goes back to really kind of tight close-ups to their faces, and that's where you see the green eyes, and that's where it really kind of comes through.
Yeah.
But I had to laugh too because I just love Wonder Woman, you know, lecturing Wally about shirking. You know, he doesn't come to meetings. He doesn't do monitor duty. You know, especially after listening to Tom versus the JLA talking about the bureaucracy of the JLA of the early 80s. I was like, oh, are we going back here?
You haven't filled out any of the paperwork. Look at these CPS reports.
I know. It's like she's like, you know, Superman was very upset when you didn't respond to a distress call. And he's like, I was indisposed. You know,
like, you didn't write that. We sent you the email and you didn't respond. We put a read receipt on it. You could have just clicked yes. Listen,
the best is when he's asking, she's like telling him that Superman's pissed. And he's like, well, what did Batman say? And Batman goes, recruit Jay Garrick. At least, you know, he's slower, but we can count on him to show up. Just like, it's funny to see the politics within the Justice League, which I like. Yeah. So, this is a great issue. It was really, really good. And I thought it was really interesting because ever since Meltzer's run, he has dropped the seed of a storyline with Black Lightning, and I felt as if this very subtly, with only one panel, continued that. You know, yep. Like
something else I saw mentioned was that people were annoyed that it was only three members of the Justice League in this issue, which is – it's not unusual to have a spotlight issue where they focus on only a small part of the team. It's something that normally happens in the team books. You don't always – every issue won't always have the full team. Sometimes you just focus the lens tightly on two or three characters, and that's what this was about.
Yeah.
It was really, really strong. I read this about halfway through the stack, and I thought, wow, that's going to be really tough to beat. And only one other book even came close to that. We'll get to that book later. But if you jumped off the book, I would say you should jump back on. At least pick this one up, because this is a really great standalone one-issue story, and if you really like the Justice League or these characters, I think you really like it. I would be shocked if anybody didn't like this, who liked this book.
Yeah. So it was really good. I second your pick.
It was a good week for conversational books, then, is what you're saying.
I don't know if it was good.
No, just people just sort of talking, sitting in a book, talking to each other a lot.
Right. Well, I think it was okay in Justice League. I don't think it was okay in Mighty Avengers, though.
Really? Mighty Avengers 12 was a big disappointment.
Really? Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah,
swing totally. And a miss. The proof that Bendis can strike out at the plate has finally happened.
Is this the prevailing wisdom?
No.
No.
You mean
our wisdom.
What's the prevailing wisdom?
I enjoyed it. I don't know. What was the problem?
I thought Maliv's art was good at times and ridiculously confusing at times.
Fury's face changed about 10 times.
Yep,
that's
exactly.
I thought he was Bruce Willis in the beginning.
I thought the pace, and then he was Nick Fury from the Ultimates for a little bit, and then
he was Dominic Purcell from Prison Break in the middle.
Yeah, and I thought that it was. I thought the storytelling and the pacing was just really just kind of kludgy. The fact that when he's cloaked, invisible cloaked, and he's standing on the hotel spying on the girl who turns out to be a Skrull, and he looks at his little handheld device, and it's a handspring visor from like 2001. It's like that's not Shield tech. That was a nitpick. I'm understanding. Really, really. I mean, like the only thing that kind of saved it was just the scene with him and Maria Hill on the helicarrier, yeah. And the idea of that Fury's getting back in the game. But even I thought the Spider-Woman scene at the end was like, I mean, it was like Maliv trying to do Chaykin. From an art standpoint,
I thought the art was like I love Maliv. Maliv's one of my favorite art guys.
Me too.
But I thought the art was a disaster in this.
It was wildly inconsistent. Yeah, it was just, yep. It was weird. It just, this whole book had a really weird feeling. And, yep. and I'm going to, you know, I mean, you know, say what you will, whatever, but you look at that cover and what the fuck, you know? So that's just me, though.
Well, the cover points to the overall storyline, which is anybody's a Skrull, but that's
right. But nobody. It's a redo of a classic cover. It's like a Marvel Zombies cover, which makes sense for Marvel Zombies, but like for this, like, you know, put Fury on the cover for Christ's sake, you know,
or at least put that on the cover of one that actually has to do with the Avengers.
Yeah,
you know what? Honestly, this story. I mean, I don't understand why this story is in Mighty Avengers. I mean, like Mighty Avengers now seems to be becoming the. The Mighty Avengers weren't in this story. Like, this is almost should have been, like, a one-shot or an annual.
Well,
or
that's because now the Avengers books are part of the storyline, so they're going to be basically another chapter of the story. It's not going to be...
Yeah.
So anything could happen in any book. It just didn't feel like Fury to me.
Yes.
The character didn't feel like Nick Fury. He didn't look like Nick Fury.
Yep.
I don't know enough of Marvel history to be at all shocked by the Skrull reveal, which was promised to me in the solicitation to be Major, and I don't know who this woman is.
I don't know who she is either.
She's been around forever. She was Nick's...
No, she has, but I had to look her up, but I don't know that.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. Yeah, yeah.
And they should... I mean, that's really marketing's fault. They shouldn't market it as a Major reveal if it's a character that, you know, that's...
Anytime
only...
it's a character who isn't new, they'll be like, it's Major. I mean, like, that's like book selling out. They just say it. Listen, Lockjaw has a blue circle around him.
So, right. And what does that mean? That he's okay?
Listen, Lockjaw has a blue circle around him. Darkhawk, no circle. So
Doctor Strange, red circle. Like, I don't know what the circles mean.
I was so happy. I was like, oh my God, Sentry's a Skrull. Wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Because I was like, the first thing I saw was Sentry with a circle. I was like, all right, sweet. Oh, wait a minute. Ugh.
I did like when after Fury got away from the helicarrier and Maria Hill's talking to the guy and she's like, you know, how did he get away? He's like, he's got a cloaking device. And she's standard issue. He's like, level 9 and up. I don't have one. It's like again, the bureaucracy. I like it.
You know what?
I thought the only strong part was the Fury Maria Hill scene, the whole, you know, the whole showing up in her bed and then jumping out. That was a really good scene. But everything before and after that, I did not.
I liked the Jessica Drew scene.
But even that felt weird.
You know what's funny is that, like, this is going totally against my characterization and stereotype, I guess, but, like, I just shut my brain off, I guess, and read through it, and I was like, ooh, fun, whatever. Maybe it wasn't good. I didn't notice.
I just think it didn't seem like Fury. Like, he doesn't look like Fury. That scene was, I'm looking at the scene with Jessica Drew right now, and he doesn't look like Nick Fury.
When I read Alex Maleev's stuff, though, I don't tend to worry about what, like, he does his own interpretations of what characters look like.
Right, but in throughout the issue, he changed.
Yeah, his face changed. I mean, they talked about his appearance changing, but really, they only seemed to reference his hair changing, and that was, it wasn't, they didn't reference his face, like, changing his face, mm-hmm. which, because yeah. His face gets different
not,
in almost every
That's not the story, though. In, like, you,
it doesn't matter. That's part. He's the main character of the story. If the main character of the story looks different on every page, it's going to deter, you know.
Well, I always knew it was Nick Fury. He had a big patch.
Well, so, yeah, but that's,
accepting that, I mean, I guess I kind of noticed it, but like I feel like I haven't seen Nick Fury in so long. I don't know how they're drawing him these days. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, whatever. I get it.
And I was hugely disappointed by it. It was just not good.
Yeah. Oh well. What can you do? Can't always hit a home run.
But sometimes you can. Speaking of swinging and hitting a ball very well, which is a metaphor that we have used a lot. We say a lot of times that Grant Morrison, he swings big. This issue of Batman to me was awesome. No?
Yes.
I
thought you were adding a second thing there. Batman 675 was the closest to a rival to Pick of the Week first Justice League. It was almost Pick of the Week.
I'm so glad I picked this up because I hadn't been picking up the Batmans lately, and I just sort of was like, well, let's see where we're at. I had so much fun reading this, and this felt like, oh, this is what Batman's supposed to feel like when Grant Morrison does it. You know?
Yep, this is the issue right before the Rest in Peace storyline begins in this title, so we're sort of transitioning out of the previous stuff into the whatever is coming. Clearly, Batman's having psychological issues.
Yes.
Is he going to take a leave of absence like Iron Man?
I mean, the original rumor was he was going to die, and then we all heard that DC Time Warner freaked out on DC. So I think I would assume that he's stepping down.
Interesting.
He's going to hit the road like Kane.
And if you saw yesterday's video show, then you know Morrison said his idea was what would happen if Batman was real, and I think his idea is that this is all doing too much for one man to take, and he's gonna have to step down.
So interesting. Kick?
Who knows? I mean, that's probably gonna be Jason Todd, but
it's gonna be Todd? No way, really?
That's been the rumors since the beginning, but
that would be awful.
Just because it makes it controversial, people will pick it up. I mean, Dick's already taken over for Batman once when he broke his back after he came back and defeated Azrael. Dick was Batman for a while. It's already happened. So
they're going to bring back the Frenchie.
Oh, God, no.
That would be bad.
So does that mean...
It's all coming together. I think everything that he's written about, all these storylines that people have said made no sense, I think they're all going to come together because they all have kind of had a thread going through them.
Do you just... The last page of this was beautiful, by the way. Like, I was like, that is how you make comic books, you know, just like art and story coming together. And it was big, bold pages in this. This felt like one of those 70s Neil Adams comic books. You know what I mean? Just big.
Well, that's what he said he was going for. It's totally that.
But he got kind of lost in that in the wild, and he wasn't always doing it. Not lost, but he just wasn't always going for that. I really liked that. That was fun. Some of the stuff in the middle of his run didn't really feel like that, but this was great. I put this down. I was like, wow, I just really enjoyed that book. That was great.
Yeah, no, it was really, really good. And this was the closest. And now I'm really looking forward to the rest in peace storyline, even though I'm not really looking forward to it. catch my drift.
I wonder if the Batman in Trinity is Bruce Wayne.
I don't know.
It does look like the kind of helmety kind of head kind of looks like what Jason Todd was wearing in Countdown as with Robin. So
he's also screaming as he's piloting that thing, like that's not the hell he's doing. So
yeah, maybe.
I think that's just how Bagley draws faces.
Yeah, I didn't read this book, so
maybe it's Ted Ford.
I have nothing to add, but so that's on. I guess is what I'm saying.
I did read Checkmate number 25.
We are just cruising from book to book with smooth transitions here. That's the beauty. Go for it.
Checkmate number 25 was Greg Rucka's last issue, right, in the book.
Yes.
Although we never found out exactly how much the writing he did versus this Troutman guy who has the co-writer.
Troutman is a pseudonym.
for what?
For Rucka. He splits up the writing duties so that he can feel more humble
amongst himself.
Yeah.
So this was the Rooks attack on Cobra. Was it Cobra?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I know that sounds unusual to say, but it's true.
But it's so funny because actually the Rook. While I was reading it, I'm like, this feels like G.I. Joe. This had a strong G.I. Joe vibe to me.
Yeah, it did feel like G.I. Joe the comic.
Yeah,
it's
really
Stalker.
Did. Yeah, totally. Stalker was in it. But so it was really interesting was that I really, really liked the first couple of pages with the four horizontal strips showing the rooks kind of coming together. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done and a lot of fun to read. And then, you know, it was a great mission, you know?
Yeah.
It was really good. I that was great. So.
You know, at the beginning of this series, 25 issues ago, by the way, I'm just shocked it made it 25 issues, by the way.
Two good years.
Yeah. Still keep going. The book's not dead. Let's not
I'm sorry, the book is dead.
The book's dead. Come on.
Bruce Jones, the book is dead.
Way dead. Even Rucko, like, whatever, he made some backhanded compliment. He's like, well, I didn't have anything to do with who they chose to take it. You know, that book's dead. Anyway, I loved the end of this because I was like, wow. I mean, you could kind of see it coming, but the whole time, you know, it was just a little sort of classic comic book misdirection thing. But I had a ton of fun with it, and the sort of Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman being there to be the sort of moral compass of everything, and you're trying to wonder which way Sasha's going to go. Like, it was just fun. The beginning of this title was so much more confusing than what it ended up being, I think. You know, like, he really hit his stride over the past 5-10 issues, I guess, where like, each issue was just really good. Not a lot of confusion.
There were two things I really liked about this issue. One, I liked the use of the Starro DNA to give them all telepathic
creepy as hell, though.
Powers. And I liked the fact that all the dialogue was overlapping. It was very well conceived.
Yeah. Handled telepathy in a way that we haven't seen before. I thought that was really cool.
Where the dialogue was said, and it was just crazy.
Apparently it's like Skype. There's a slight delay.
What?
And two things I really liked about this issue. One was the Starro DNA. That was going back. Never mind. Then when Batman landed his ship, I got a little excited.
Yeah. The Batman landing the ship was pretty cool.
No, because...
you don't see the Batplane much these days.
No, not that, because Sasha started walking towards the plane, and they haven't had a scene together yet.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I got a little gaspy, like, oh, what's going
to
happen?
I was like, look, they went back to the pointy shoulder Batman. Oh, he's using the Howard Porter reference. Okay.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that. So, good ending. Sad to see it go.
Yeah. But hey, maybe Bruce Jones will pull. I won't know. Let us know.
But it should go without saying that probably will three or four trades come out of this 25 issue run.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, three or four trades will come out, and it'll be near comic perfection, and you can hang
out. It's respectable in this day and age for a book like that.
Totally. It was a great run. Honestly, did you ever think that I would be here at issue 25 still reading it?
No.
Yeah.
No, the math doesn't add up on that one.
Yeah.
Should we all thank Daryl, then? Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Daryl, if you're out there stalking the streets.
And tell us how awesome Justice League was, anyway.
Yeah. I would agree with him.
It was good.
Yeah.
You didn't buy it, Josh.
I didn't, no.
You lose.
Well, Wednesday.
If you change your mind, you can get a Jim Hanley's Universe. It's one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. Jim Hanley's Universe offers the best selection of comic titles related merchandise, from mainstream to manga to minis. Jim Hanley's Universe has it all. Jim Hanley's Universe is located opposite the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan at 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island. And you can visit Jim Hanley's Universe on the web at jhuniverse.com. Visit them at MySpace at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. Jim Hanley's Universe, where art and literature meet. Go get that Justice League issue, Josh.
Easily accessible from the NRWF. Whatever. Those are the trains in Manhattan, for those of you not here.
Lots of trains.
You're going to do it. You got to sell it, man. You can't bail halfway through.
You can't remember. You got to go all the way through.
It's all of them. I started to say the G, and I was like, that's not right.
The Q, the F, the N, the R, the W.
Wow, you sound like my grandfather betting on the horses at Belmont.
Bringing it
back. I put 20 on the 4 and the W and the anyway. So Young Avengers Presents number 4 came out this week, and and what's really interesting, what's tough about these books, it was written by Paul Cornell, who we had the pleasure of meeting at the New York Comic Con this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Very fine writer indeed, and it was penciled by Mark Brooks, who I know a lot of people who really like Mark Brooks, and I can't say I'm a big fan of him.
I liked him better on the it was the Ultimate Spider-Man annuals.
Yeah, that was like his high moment. But these Young Avengers Presents books are interesting because so for those of you who don't know, a few years ago, I want to say Damon Lindelof, but it was Alan Heinberg wrote a really really like A-minus grade series called Young Avengers. It was 12 issues. No. I mean, it was really, really, really – like I loved it. It was close to perfect. There were a couple of flaws.
It wasn't The Watchmen, but it was really good.
Right. It was really good. Jim Chung did the pencils. They were just amazing. And
it was The Watchmen of Young Avengers books.
Yes, exactly. And what happened was is that then Alan Heinberg, who was writing the OC at the time or working on the OC at the time, then went to work on Grey's Anatomy, and then he went and did his TV job, which is what they do. For some reason, he has a stranglehold on these characters, and they've appeared in Civil War, they've appeared in other things like that, but and he claims he's going to come back and do another series with them, but not for several years. So in order to bridge that gap, they said, well, we're going to do Young Avengers Presents, and we'll get different writers and artists to work on the single one-shots of the characters, and Heinberg and Chung will have, you know, input to it, and we'll stay true to the characters. And what's tough then is that you get a book that doesn't really matter. And that's what these books have been. You know, and it's – and I feel bad because, you know, Paul Cornell, I think he wrote a good issue of a comic book that doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like this is a story focusing on the Vision, and he goes and visits Stature, who is the old Ant-Man's daughter, who's in the Initiative, and the Vision chose Captain America's side, anti-Reg, and this is the first time they've kind of met since it all happened, and he kind of professes his love for her, and it's a very cute romantic story, and I thought it had some great moments. I thought it was a good story, had some good action, but in the grand scheme of things, like in the context of it being in the Initiative, I feel like this book is a year too late already, and then it just generally just doesn't matter. So I feel
it's not a year too late because the other stuff's going on. This is after the fact, and people trying to put their lives back together afterwards, which is
well, yeah, true, yeah, no. But I feel like with the whole Initiative thing falling flat on its face a year later after it started, the as we talked about before, the Initiative doesn't really matter. So
yeah, but you were arguing that it did last week, and we were saying it didn't.
No.
Oh.
Yes.
No, I was arguing. No, what are you talking about? Were you talking about the Rhodes, Jim Rhodes, or
we were talking about?
We said it wasn't an Avengers book.
Oh, I was saying it is an Avengers book. It's happening. Yeah, it's happening. But the whole Initiative concept to me hasn't been executed very well. The book's still happening.
It's got no influence outside of its own pages.
Exactly. Right.
That's all we were saying. And you were like, no, it's an Avengers book. And Hank Pym.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's just Avengers is in the title.
Right,
it's
like,
you need to pick a side, you flip flopper.
Anyway, but so, you know, so that this book was tough because I want to like it because I love these characters, but, you know.
All right, let me just go on record and just say, hey, this is the weirdest show we've ever done because this is you guys just going, well, blah, and I'm going, no, it was fine. It was good. You know what? I don't know what sort of world, what else world kind of thing has got going on.
Sort of bizarro world.
Listen, I never
read
the
Young Avengers. Almost like a square world.
I guess I just missed it, and I think that I missed it mainly because back then when I heard about it, the pitch, and this is from my comic book guy, was it's the guy who writes for the OC, and I was like, I don't want to buy that, so I never read Young Avengers, and it's one of those things. I know we've done this. Ron thinks I should buy it. That's fine. I probably should. It's one of those things I keep meaning to pick up, and every time I pick it up, I'm like, I don't really want to spend $20 on this right now, and literally that's the only reason. However, what this did for me is since I never read it. It rekindled my fond feelings for the Vision, which of course reminded me of the old Avengers West Coast, which I used to read, which were sort of in my formative years. It's my Excalibur to Ron's experience, I suppose.
Just to quickly build on that, the cover by Jim Chung with the Vision on top of the other artists' classic Visions was awesome. But anyway, okay.
And so because of that, I was like, I was kind of interested in seeing, because I don't know what the Young Avengers are. I was like, now this is Vision, but it's not. And I liked it. I thought it was a good updating of the character. I really always liked the Vision for whatever reason. He's sort of the Martian Manhunter of the Marvel Universe, I think. He's on the team. He's formidable. He's a bit alien, but he's got a humanity about him. And I thought this was really good for one thing. I was like, this is just two people talking the whole time.
Yep.
And it was still fairly compelling, and I didn't know either of the characters. I had fun with this issue. It wasn't the most amazing thing ever, but it really felt good, and it reminded me of comics that I really liked. So.
Yeah, and
one moment made me laugh out loud, and that was the car full of AIM guys.
Yes, I love that. That was really good.
cut to some sort of sedan sitting out on the street, and there's four AIM guys packed in it in their full suits. That made me laugh.
I love AIM. AIM is great.
That's a funny image. AIM is anytime you can throw AIM in, I'm down for that.
Yeah,
it's a cheap and wonderful gag. How about them New Gods? They dead?
Well, here's the problem. New Gods number 8 came out. This is the finale of the New God, Death of the New Gods miniseries. And it would have worked much more dramatically had this issue come out last week, because last week in Countdown, Darkseid killed Orion killed Darkseid, and then that happened. So this in this issue is the beginning of that fight on out in space. So Darkseid and Orion start fighting. Darkseid escapes to Earth, where he then he follows him into Countdown and kills him there. So really, I don't know if this was scheduled. I don't know if this issue came out late or if this book itself got. Clearly, Countdown didn't come out late because it was every week. But if this book came out even 1 month late, then that would have screwed up everything. But it was good, but that one little thing, you know, kind of threw it off. It would have been really dramatic had it gone the other way, but having the ending already spoiled kind of ruined the whole.
It would have been really cool if it came out the week before last.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, well.
So that happened. But it was good.
So that happened.
So does the
My only
story...
point of that is it would have been better had that come out.
So does the story. Like, if you were to buy the trade of Death of the New Gods, I guess, when it comes out, does the story not actually end in it?
It ends in that the New Gods are all killed.
All right.
And there's a complete story here. The only thing you're not left with is the final fate of Darkseid, which happens in Countdown. But everything else, the new Apocalypse and, the other one I'm blanking on, the other the good planet.
New Genesis?
Okay. New Genesis.
Wow, they get merged. Look at me pulling out the new gods.
they get merged into one planet, and then all the other new gods are dead, and they're preparing for the next wave of gods. So it was good. It was Jim Starlin on the writing and the art for 8 issues. And
that's awesome. That's been a
big old classic sort of cosmic Kirby-esque fighting and characters and bombast.
Yep.
Really, really good.
All right.
Really, really good.
So, real quickly, we wanted to mention Ultimate Spider-Man 121.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I think there was something that made me really laugh in this issue, and that is Omega Red attacks the Bugle because he's pissed off. He's not getting any work because he's been slandered in the paper.
Yep.
And I was laughing because Omega Red's got J. Jonah Jameson trapped in his closet. And it was just funny to me that this guy was saying... He was talking about how he's considering coming to get revenge, and he thought, no, these people are just doing their jobs. I can't get mad at them. It just seemed like very sort of standard to have this big guy with pointy ears, and it just made me laugh. I don't know why. Just Bendis has been very funny lately.
And then the fact that Omega Red is in Jameson's office, and then Spider-Man bursts in, and there's like about five or six panels of fight that where everyone outside in the office doesn't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all just kind of like, something going on in there? Like, just...
I thought there's two things that were great about this issue. It was Peter Parker in high school drama kind of thing. Like, they're keeping that amped up enough. Like, oh, I can't keep my life straight. That's that essence of Spider-Man kind of thing, the pressure of everything. I thought that the whole Daily Planet stuff was really fun from Jonah not going, I don't know who you are.
I don't recognize you.
And also just Spider-Man was written really well in this. Like it was a really fun classic Spider-Man fight where he was quipping and running around and just doing stuff, and it was just good old classic stuff.
So, I think he's been energized since Imonen has come on.
Yeah, totally.
I think the writing's gotten better, but the idea that there's the supervillains sit around reading the paper, you know, reading about them going, gah!
Yeah, it's funny.
Get that out of it. Oh, he's just doing his job. He's writing articles. But, he wrote about me.
And the last book I wanted to mention really quickly was Fable 72, which came out this week. This is sort of like a one-shot, which is in the middle of the big story, but it focuses on Cinderella, who in the time since she's been on Earth has become the world's foremost spy/assassin. And it is the most fun characterization that I've seen in this book in such a long time. And then her foil in this is Hansel from Hansel and Gretel, and he's like the classic German bad guy because his name is Hansel.
Oh,
and so like he's the dude from Indiana Jones who gets his face melted. Like imagine that's what Hansel is in this, and like she's just completely badass, and you know he's. You know, vaguely bumbling, and this was totally like a great imaginative issue, and I had a lot of fun. There's tons of fighting and tons of action. And it was just another really, really strong issue. Although the borders of this, which were a picture of a shoe because it's Cinderella, were really annoying. But besides that, it was great. Like Connor, I think you would have really liked this issue a lot. It's fun stuff.
Yeah, there was a big discussion on the forums this week about Fables, whether or not I was going to start up reading it again, because I've sort of forgotten about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's your Young Avengers.
No, I read the first issue of Young Avengers. It was good.
All right.
Young Avengers. Anyway, cool. So, so those are the comics that we thought were worth discussing. But
it was a light week.
It was a light week. But if you head over to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the list of comics that came out this week, and actually the iFanboy community weighs in on what they think of some thought of the comics that came out. And so we wanted to highlight a couple of them. Connor, do you want to take the first one?
I could, but I'll probably be the only one to talk about it. Face writes and said about Countdown to Final Crisis number one. He gave a story a 2 out of 5 and an art 3 out of 5. And he says, Countdown number one is everything I've begun to expect from a final issue and every event I've read recently. It was sappy and lame. Final issues / epilogues are like that. They're the conclusion to a story. And I thought this was a good one to highlight because I see people everywhere gnashing their teeth over it. It was an epilogue.
Yeah.
The climax was last issue.
Yep.
So this is the standard epilogue come down from the climax. So I didn't see what everyone was freaking out about. This was pretty normal.
Listen, yeah. If this was Lord of the Rings, you'd be reading it for 3 days. So
yeah, it was the last 30 minutes of Lord of the Rings, basically.
I did like the humor of Ray Palmer getting more and more annoyed as people showing up at his house. I thought that was kind of funny.
Get out of my house!
And I thought it was funny where who monitors the monitors. So I was like, all right, well, okay, Watchmen. Anyway. So yeah, Countdown, yay. So our next review comes from O'Caroline, and she's writing about Uncanny X-Men number 497, which she gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And she says, with issue number 497, I'm happy to say I've learned to stop worrying and love this title again. This comic was just straight-up fun, with two teams of X-Men on different sides of the world fighting bad guys via resourceful use of their powers. Resourceful, in Cyclops' case, meaning hide behind your girlfriend's impenetrable skin, and Wolverine's meaning fall real good. And I got to agree with her. This arc, I've been, I'm going to read X-Men until the day I die. So, so it's really kind of non-negotiable. But this
unless
kind of
I don't think you need to worry about that. I think worry about them.
Yeah.
Unless they renumber it.
Unless they renumber
made
it, right.
You made that promise.
I want that to happen so bad. Listen,
I will pay Joe Quesada $10,000 just to do
too.
That.
I would, too. If we could take up some sort of way to get that done, a petition. Oh, that would be awesome.
but I thought this issue was actually it was fun. I had no problems with this issue. I thought it was great. I don't know if the art I still have a little bit of trouble with, but so far the story's been great. So
who's on?
I think Mike Choi is the artist.
Yeah,
he's just been made Marvel exclusive. They are signing everybody up. They can get their hands on.
Yeah,
I think the best part of Uncanny X-Men is the art.
All right, well.
I think the story is like very average.
Yeah, but
average is a negative connotation, which it shouldn't. It's like right. It's not great, it's not bad. It's just very much
And honestly, that's the story that it needs to be leading up to whatever happens in 500.
Right, I agree. I can definitely see that. I just think that I gasped there involved. it's there. It's good. It's not great. It's not bad. I read it, and I'm not upset I did, but nor am I excited that I've read it. Like, it's just there.
Yeah. Well, like I said, right now it's a come down kind of, like it's a – and then a 500 probably will amp it up again. And so anyway. So if you want to share – if you want to tell everybody what you thought of the comics that came out this week or next week or last week or any week coming up in the future, head over to ifanboy.com/comics where you can do your own pull list and write your own reviews. And if you need to buy your comics, you might want to look at the Discount Comic Book Service located at DCBService.com. They're a great online retailer for comic books. They've got monthly specials up to 75% off. Generally, they're about 40% off the major publishers. What you can do is you go on the website, you can pick the comics you want to buy, and then they'll ship them to you for a flat rate of $5.95 for all U.S. Domestic orders. Pretty much anything that comes in Diamond's previous catalog, you can order. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for you. If you're like Connor, you can track the orders and see the every step of the way as it goes from
the
warehouse to the delivery truck to other things. So, so head over to dcbservice.com and order your comic books. And we also quickly want to mention instocktrades.com is another website where you can get trade paperbacks. And they've got our April Book of the Month, Justice League International, discounted at 47% off. So the book's like $13. You can only get it for like a couple more days left in April. So make sure you go to instocktrades.com, pick that up as well.
Email. We've been letting the email pile up.
Yep.
And so let's knock some out of the park tonight.
All right. Yay, baseball's back.
The first email is from Chris C. from Sacramento, California, and he says, I regularly listen to the podcast and read lots of online sites about comics. I have a limited amount of my income that I can devote to comics. Buying a trade means that it's $15 I can't put towards other things I or my children might need.
Ouch.
So for me to buy a trade, it needs to be a lock, so to speak. I recently bought a trade that was well-received, Invincible Volume 1, and I found the art to be decent, but the story to be run-of-the-mill, and I really regretted my purchase after. Huge buyer's remorse. I don't expect trades to be Watchmen every time, but it seems like I get disappointed more often than not. It seems so often lately I don't seem to have an affinity for what many readers love currently. I enjoy Whedon Comics, The 12, Project Superpowers, The Boys, and a few others. I just don't have time to stand at the comic store and read the trades before I buy them. It's almost like I need a different review scale. What do you suggest I do for my problem?
Get rid of the kids or get a second job.
Oh. have you looked into BitTorrent?
Oh. That's really funny.
I don't know what to tell him, Chris. I'm sorry.
It's tough because ultimately you're the arbiter. You're the final arbiter of your taste. I mean, we can all recommend books, but you have to decide whether or not it sounds like something you would like.
All three of us love Invincible, and many people have, but some people don't like it. You know, we can't.
And what's really interesting is that there'll be times where there'll be comics that we all like or our friends like, and that we've got things that we agree on, but then we'll suggest something and we, you know, radically disagree on it. You know what I mean? Like, everybody has that different taste, and you don't really know until you read it. So it's kind of hard.
You're basically asking, how can I be sure that the things I buy are things I love? And right.
There's no way.
Yep.
I mean,
not in any medium, not in film, not in television, not in anything. Right. You have to watch it or read it to decide.
So the good thing, hopefully he didn't buy the Invincible oversized hardcover at $100.
If he did, he would have gotten to the second and third trade area, and he would have been like, oh, I was wrong. This is completely effing awesome. You have two options. One, deal with it. Two, go to the library.
Yes, libraries.
Library is a good idea. Gosh.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, my mom's a librarian, and I recently visited her, and I went into the library. They had an entire room dedicated for comics for, like, the past 2 months and, like, for the next 2 months. And, like, not only was it, like, you think when I kind of, you know, I dismissed the, like, oh, they're going to have, you know, they're going to ghettoize comics, they're going to put in the kids section or all this kind of stuff. They had R. Crumb. They had Watchmen. They had Will Eisner's, you know, the Conversation with God one. Like, there was such a selection. Libraries have come really far in the past 10 years on comics. So, like, definitely go to your local library.
Did you steal any?
No, I didn't steal any.
See that? I gave him some really bad options, but then I gave him a good option.
Yeah, that was a great one. Good job.
Ron, take us all.
Our next email comes from Brian, who says that, so my friends and I were having that classic argument about shapeshifters today. Yeah, that classic argument about shapeshifters. I had it yesterday at work. Now, and Brian decided he wanted to get our input on it. When a shapeshifter like Morph or Chameleon Boy becomes a woman, can he get pregnant? And if he did get pregnant, what would happen if he changed back into a man while pregnant? I thought that he could change his entire body, including internal sexual organs, into a female reproductive system, but wouldn't be able to conceive. What do you think? This is serious business. Well, Brian, I'm glad you've asked, because I've been thinking about this for years. I don't know. What the fuck?
Well, it stands to reason if you can change your outer appearance, you should be able to change your internal appearance, right?
I would say that you would change your internal appearance, but I would agree with him that probably he wouldn't
produce eggs.
Yeah, he wouldn't be able to. Yeah, wouldn't be able to keep the baby or hold on.
But if he makes fallopian tubes, why couldn't he produce eggs?
Because he's barren.
So perhaps you could say a character like Mystique, for example, is an actually biologically female, but sort of psychologically female. So that's what she relates to. So that's what she becomes.
Right.
So she's like a.
Right, but how does that affect the physical organs? Like, is Mystique a woman, and can Mystique, you know, carry a child?
I don't know.
Yeah, she's a woman. Mystique's a woman because she chooses to be a woman. Is what Josh says. She's psychologically female. She could be whatever.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
But theoretically,
if you have that, the
question then becomes: when they're changing their form, are they actually changing the function of those items that they're changing, or is it just cosmetic?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Grant Morrison could do some really fucked up shit with this.
I think there's a great, there's a huge door opening for like the transgendered superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is. I mean, I kind of categorize that with like, could Lois Lane carry Superman's baby? You know what I mean? That sort of thing. You know, like the you know, right. Because the force of
him.
Well, not
compatible life forms. What do you think the chances are that? I mean, you couldn't fuck an armadillo and have a kid. I mean, they're biologically completely different. Even before
the egg, even before the egg and the sperm joining, the mall rats argument, the force of him.
Oh, no,
Superman just puts a quarter back.
Superman has remarkable muscle control. I'm serious.
All right, let's move on.
It'd probably give her cancer and kill her. Is what would really
Daniel.
Happen.
Daniel from Australia writes and says, just wanted to get your thoughts on talking comics with people who don't read comics. I was talking to a friend about superheroes I liked. My friend knows the major ones but doesn't read comics. He said, Green Lantern is my favorite hero. I asked him which one, and his reply was, what? Not knowing that it's not just one character, I went on to explain the just Green Lantern core. Another instance, I was at work, and I made mention of Batgirl. A younger guy asked who she was, and before I could answer, another guy responded, Alfred's niece. So I'm just curious if this happens to you guys, and do you correct them or let it slide?
I let it slide.
You do not, you big idiot, you liar.
No, I do. I do.
You got it completely wrong. No, you were.
At work.
You are with us.
The problem, well, yeah, because with us, with all of us. But the problem is, like, at work, it's funny because at work, and this happens to us a lot, at work, people tend to try to go roundabout ways to associate things to comics when they talk about me. Mm-hmm. Because when they talk to me, because they think that's really all I know. You know, like, oh, we got to get this project done. I guess we need Superman, huh? And I'm just like,
fuck you.
I like other things.
I like the token conversation the weekend after a superhero movie. So, yeah. Josh, what'd you think of that X-Men 3?
Yeah,
I think you need to leave me alone because you don't really want to talk about it with me.
And I mean, I've gotten people coming up to me with really specific curious questions. They're just like, well, wait, you know, well, like, I was at dinner the other night and someone picked up Secret Invasion randomly, hadn't read comics for like 5 years. And he's like, yeah, that was really, really, or like more, like since he was a kid. And he's like, yeah, it was really, really good. He's like, but why are the Avengers fighting? Like, why are they split? And I was like, well, you see, in Stanford, and I had to explain everything for like an hour during this dinner. And I was like, you know, I really don't want to talk about this.
I had a friend who was a stand-up comedian, and he had this whole bit in it that was about superheroes. Like, he did a Hulk thing. And he used to call me all the time for clarifications. Like, there was like a month period where I was just getting – like all the time. And it was like this one that we couldn't solve was how does Superman fly? And like I was writing to Superman writers and trying to get answers and things like that. And we just – it didn't
– But I mean,
I think in these two scenarios, I definitely let the Green Lantern thing slide. But I actually have – in like the Batgirl scenario, I have – engage people in discussion about the difference between comics and the movies.
Yeah.
Like if somebody said Alfred's niece, I would have probably said, yes, that's one version, another version is this. But I wouldn't, you know, go around doing that.
Yeah, none of us are comic book guy going, no, excuse me, you're wrong. You know, like it's not like that. I mean, it's the same thing. Honestly, it's the same thing with Star Wars stuff. I mean, people say stuff about Star Wars that's wrong all the time, and I either just let it slide or I just try to politely correct them and go, no, actually, but, you know.
But he keeps a list.
Yeah.
And you're on it, buddy.
And he quietly mutters to himself. You give me the shortest email in the world to read.
Do it.
Jay from Southern California says, do each of you have a favorite editor?
Fantastic question.
Yeah, I like
Perry White.
Great like Caesar's Ghost.
Thelma Schoonmaker. Yeah, that's right, film geeks.
Do you pay attention to the editors anymore?
Yes.
No.
Sometimes certain editors I know sort of do good projects and stuff, like the Vertigo editors. I kind of pay attention to who's doing
well, Will Dennis
and Bob Schreck was a guy who
yes,
you knew when he was editing a book it was going to be pretty good because he was the guy who was responsible for the Great Detectives and Batman's and the Green Arrow.
Dark Knight Strikes Back.
Yeah. Of
no, the Dark Knight Strikes Back.
I didn't hate that.
He did do it. He did edit that. They're trying to promote the editors now as sort of superstars like writers. They're trying to.
Actually, it's different because I think Marvel is, because like you got the Axel Alonso's of the world. It's supposed to be, you know, like the awesome editor and all that kind of
Steve
stuff.
Wacker.
Yeah, and Wacker. But like DC is trying to hide the editors. DC doesn't want the editors talking to podcasts or anything. I mean, like
possibly because all of the editorial problems at DC. Someone to aim the ire at. But I honestly don't – I'm sorry if editors are listening. I don't pay attention to who's editing.
I look to see who's working on books I like. You know what I mean? Like the editorial team on Nova is a good editorial team, if you ask me. You know what I mean?
You know, the thing is, though, it's like a film score. If I've noticed the editor, then there's a problem. Like, that means I'm looking for who's responsible for this problem.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, but there are times when you look for something to be really good, you know? So.
I don't ever look for an editor unless I want to know who to blame. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have –
But beforehand, like sometimes editors have certain types of book. Like I was talking about the Vertigo stuff, and you mentioned Will Dennis. Like, so he does Hellblazer, and he does you know, like 100 Bullets, and so he is more that sort of gritty, edgy, violent. The Scalped, I think, is his. You know, whereas like Shelley Bond has a completely other type of book that she seems to do.
Meanwhile, like Brevoort has kind of moved into this, you know, kind of godlike editor position at Marvel, and like I said, Alonso. But like, you don't really hear anything about like Bill Roseman, you know, or you know,
Annihilation.
He was on Annihilation, yeah. But still, anyway. But
all right, let's get to the last question.
All right, last question. Ryan from Wichita, Kansas. With the release of the Iron Man movie drawing ever closer, I can't help but notice all the hype of this movie, and I just don't mean from the fans in Iron Man comics. I'm talking about the hype from places like Walmart and Burger King. This movie is going to be promoted like hell to kids who have absolutely no idea who Iron Man is, with all the toys and the blasters and even the god-awful candy and birthday supplies. Then the theater will be filled with annoying little kids who are there because they saw an action figure for it in the store. Now, when I was a kid, I didn't find out about superheroes from toy commercials. I learned about them from reading comics about them, and even watching TV series based on the comics. Ah, the days of Spider-Man the Animated Series. Plus, do we really want children idolizing an alcoholic playboy? Of course, if anyone knew anything about Iron Man, that wouldn't be a problem, and I wouldn't be stuck in a theater with a bunch of annoying kids who won't shut the hell up. Did Josh send this question in? So now for this question. As true comic fans, do you feel a little discouraged to see so many kids getting to know your favorite comic heroes and villains through Burger King?
May I?
Yes.
Okay, if you want comics to stick around, you better get the fucking kids to like it.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to act like an elitist person who doesn't want people – I'm a true fan, it's dead. It's dead right now. And I'm sorry, but we've been selling movies and stuff through toys since Star Wars.
I don't know about you, Josh, but I know Connor and I, you know, Marvel's Secret Wars figures and DC Superpowers line.
Dude, squeeze the legs.
Yeah, totally. So –
And you said animated Spider-Man, Spider-Man the Animated Series, which means you're probably younger than us.
Or older, if he's referring to the really old one.
Spider-Man
His Amazing Friends.
There was an older one in the 60s.
Cut some of this email for time, and he was referring to the 90s cartoon.
Yeah. So listen, the kids in the movies are irritated. Sure, go to the 10 o'clock show. There'll only be three or four.
Sounds like somebody had a bad experience at the theater with a bunch of kids at a comic book.
Connor and I went to see Spider-Man 3, and the back row behind us was...
I was there.
Ron was there with us.
Sorry, he sleeps during... No,
he was there!
No, you're right,
I was right next to you! Jesus!
I was thinking the last time Connor and I went to see the last movie we saw, I was putting them together.
That was
I haven't
30
been to
days
movies
night,
in months. Yeah. Anyways, when we went to see Spider-Man 3, there was like a bunch of kids there. But you know what? If two of those kids end up reading comic books... And then the other benefit of all those toys and all that stuff, it doesn't affect your comic books. Your comic books stay as good as ever, except they have a lot more capital to work with, and they can hire better people to work on them.
Honestly, if 20 kids see Burger King Iron Man Happy Meals and 10 go and buy the comics and 5 keep reading them until they're our age, then that's what we need. So, you know. Anyway.
Also, Iron Man is a Marvel movie, so they're going to make all that money.
Yes, and it's going to be fucking good. I'm psyched. Next week.
Alcoholic Playboy on the screen as the alcoholic playboy in the page.
Yes.
Either way, it's an alcoholic playboy.
Exactly.
And he's hardly the worst character in mainstream media.
Yeah, that's for sure. So if you have any questions that you want to ask us about anything or just, you know, complain to us or whatever, email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
And if you want to get movies from the mail and over the internet, you can go to Netflix.com, who have over 90,000 titles. That's a lot. There's no late fees, free shipping both ways. You got the HD with the Blu-ray titles available. Very fast delivery, usually just a day either way. They've got plans starting from just $4.99. And if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, had you not already, you can get a free 2-week trial. And then everybody's happy. Am I
Yay.
Right?
Yeah.
So because we did so many emails, we're going to skip the voicemails. We want to remind you that you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Thank you for calling, those who did.
Yes. We'll get to you next week.
So this week ended long week of comics.
Whew.
Long. It was the New York Comic Con last week. We had a lot of fun. Hopefully you saw the show we did on it yesterday. We wanted to thank everybody we met and came to our iFanboy party and talked to and had a good time with. If you did go to that party, there's about 5 pictures from the party up on our Flickr stream. So if you check that out, maybe you made the pictures. We didn't take them. Somebody sent them in to us. If you took any pictures,
please,
and you were at the party, send them in to us, and we'll put them up on our.
Either send them to us or tag them iFanboy and you know, tag them iFanboy or tag them, you know, New York Comic Con.
We took a lot of pictures. I mean, they're out there.
Exactly. So. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we were in a lot of them. So if you took them, send them our
positive experiences meeting us.
Yes, that would be nice. This con was a great. It was a great time in New York.
Thank you to Paul the intern for helping us.
Yeah, great job. Great job. And we met so many great people, and it was just so awesome to see the iFan base in full force. And it was just
we owned the back of that bar. We owned it.
That was our best con. Come on.
Yeah, totally. It totally was. And not even the party was great. I mean, so many people came to the party. It was totally overwhelmed by that. But even the convention, I mean, it was just so much fun to see folks. We saw some people wearing the iFanboy t-shirt. It was awesome. It was great. It was excellent. So it doesn't get better than that.
And you know what? If I do say it was a good show, people.
Yes.
You did good work.
It was a good con. So, but if you wanted to, if you couldn't make it to New York and you wanted to experience the convention, you should go to ifanboy.com. And as of yesterday, you could see our hour-long extravaganza of the New York Comic Con that came out. It's also available at revision3.com/ifanboy. A monster episode. Really, I gotta admit, I've watched it maybe 3 or 4 times now, and it's great. I mean, I know I was there and I was in it, but it was a lot of fun. It's a good show.
And you're a narcissist.
But
I watched it 100 times.
But just want to remind everybody, we have a video show every Saturday, a weekly long version of the video comes out, and every day we're putting out the iFanboy minis, which are a shorter version of the video show talking about comics. You can find it on iTunes. We've got HD versions on iTunes as well as large and small QuickTime for whatever format you like. You can go to ifanboy.com and pick it up there. But also, you know, Revision 3 is really busting their ass to get the show on other platforms and things like that. So, like, if you have TiVo. There's a good chance you can find us maybe in the TiVoCast section. Maybe if you're a beta tester, you might be able to find it. But we're going to be coming to TiVo as a premium channel very soon, as well as, you know, like you can see us on – currently if you go to blip.tv, you can find iFanboy and Blip, a whole bunch of other platforms. So, like, basically wherever you're watching video, we want to put iFanboy there. So let us know where you watch video and where you want to see it, because we want to make sure that everybody gets to enjoy the show. So
yeah, so if you've got TiVo, you can just – you don't have to get it off the net. You just watch it right on your big TV there.
Exactly. It's awesome. So definitely look out
for – much more of us than you ever needed.
Yes, exactly. and next week, yesterday you saw on Saturday, you saw the New York Con come out. And the next week is going to be an episode focusing on Grant Morrison, which is going to be quite special.
Great. That's great. Isn't that? Though. More Grant Morrison than you can handle.
Yep.
That doesn't what he sounds like, by the way. Just so we're clear. Ron mentioned the iFanboy minis. They're very good. They're on in the weekdays. That was my part in the script. Moving on.
Actually, you skipped your part, which was the pick of the website.
Listen, everything got changed around.
You're not a good improver. You have to take improv.
Oddly enough, I am. I've taken a lot of classes. I'm usually very good at it. Anyways, get over to ifanboy.com. There's the written pick of the week. There is content every day. Paul Dini rocked house this week with his 200 words.
Very funny.
Oh,
very funny.
Every time I see the title, oh, so good.
And not only we had the Jonathan Hickman's reaction to his Eisner nomination, which was very surprising.
Yes, yes. That was also excellent. He brings it every 2 weeks. And all sorts of other great stuff. Good. Tons of reviews on there, like we talked about earlier. Write those reviews, get them in. We'll either put them on the site or read them on the show. Do all that stuff. So get over to iFanboy.com, obviously.
Yes, and if you head over to ifanboy.com/store, you can find your gateway to amazon.com via ifanboy to buy all your comics. Purchase comics, video games, music, whatever you want, purchase through Amazon. Helps us out in the end, so head over to ifanboy.com/store.
And if you want a t-shirt, you can go to jinx.com/ifanboy. They got the nice iFanboy t-shirts, which we saw people wearing at the convention. You can get one there, send a picture of yourself wearing the t-shirt to us or to Jinx, and we'll be very happy. So jinx.com/ifanboy.
And as we mentioned, you can shoot us an email, contact@ifanboy.com, or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
I want to make with the social networking, go to ifanboy.com/about. There's more links than you'll know what to do with for Connor, Ron, myself, and Gordon, and then iFanboy is a huge, we're always on Twitter. We're always...
Yeah, I was going to say, we really want to follow Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, it's becoming a real hotbed of comics, folks. You know, H&M at Marvel's posting a lot of comic pros like Ben Templesmith and Rick Remender and stuff like that. They're there, as well as follow us, because, you know, I'm close to 400 followers, and I'd like to have more, please.
You
so.
Have more than me.
And finally, if you like the show... We speed through this at the end, but we're going to remind everybody, if you like the show, go to iTunes and write a review. I don't know how else plainly to say it.
last year we had the big push for this. We had the competition going with Around Comics for who could get more reviews out of their listener base, but we sort of neglected. We need to push again. Let's have another push, folks.
It helps a lot. And
if you like the show, take 2 minutes to go to iTunes, write up a nice review and help spread the word. It really does help make the show more prominent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
And other than that, if there's anyone you think who might like the show, let them know about it, because a lot of people don't know about podcasts. They don't know that there's this form of media out there that they can get all for free, and it will change their life. You hear me? I will change your life.
And if you like the show, after writing a review, if you really like the show, you can go donate some cash to the cause at ifanboy.com/donations.
Or if you're just a random benefactor and you just give out money for – if Bill Gates, if you're like a closet comic fan, send us a billion.
You know, there's a dude who goes to Macy's every Christmas and hands $100 bills in front of Macy's.
Oh, really? We got to get the Macy's.
Yes, keep going. Keep circling the block.
Ron, it would really take a lot for you, that trip to be worthwhile for you.
It really would, wouldn't it?
I mean, it would be like the Michigan bottle run. I mean, you have to. That is an old Seinfeld reference, and I've realized this week that every time I reference Seinfeld, I'm showing my age. It's terrible.
That's all right. This has been a big week for Seinfeld. I made a bunch of Seinfeld references as well, too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
A bunch of 25-year-olds looking at you going, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you get
it's
the
funny
mood.
It's funny because it stands up. It really does stand up. Okay, anyway. So hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.